This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
I think one of the things that we wanted to do is announce that our purse will go up $2 million to $15 million. It'll be the largest purse that's been paid here in the history as far as all the information that I could get. Well, I think that's correct. And the winner either will get at least $2 million. Then you also have the other leader circle and other winnings you might get for pole position, leading laps that could add to that. I think last year, Simon Pagenaud got almost $2.6 million. So we think that's important. We're investing not only in the track, but also to try to provide additional money to the teams that are successful here. I think something else, which been a lot of discussion, I even made a comment back that should we have guaranteed starting spots, and was very quickly realizing that listening to the fans and looking at the information that flowed to my desk that the fans here, the history here is having a bump day. And I think that that will take place this year's Indy 500. They're going to add an additional 15 minutes. There'll be 75 minutes. So you'll be able to have more than one attempt. And I think that's going to make it really exciting based on, obviously, the entry level. And we're seeing some real interest. I think Jay Fry would say we saw almost 27 drivers taking a chance to go around the track in COTA here this last week. So, you know, obviously there's some excitement. And I think that's going to make a big difference when you think about NBC also adding additional hours, to our race weekend and our qualifying weekends will certainly make a big difference. And then we have a number of new sponsors that we'll, again, be able to talk about this morning. Then on top of that, I think we're very most proud that we're going to be able to show you for the first time what we're really going to do for fan experience and certainly guest enhancement. So let me turn it back to you.
There is much ground to cover tonight, mostly good, fun topics, and unfortunately, also the realities of motorsport. We await what we hope will be more positive information on Ryan Newman's status. The first bit of good news was that he survived the horrific crash and is awake talking to his family after the finish and that scary crash last night's Daytona 500. We've now seen cars on track for IndyCar, and after a day of install laps, nearly in the snow, they've been up to speed. What did we learn at spring training at Circuit of the Americas in Austin? We'll talk about it. What was learned about the Red Bull Aero screen on the road course and then on the Super Speedway at Texas? We've got still some driver lineups to sort out and Indianapolis 500 seats, and the 2021 rumor mill has already started. And we started hearing from Roger Penske on Penske Entertainment's immediate plans for this year's Indianapolis 500. Hello, welcome. Thanks for joining us downtown from the MS Communications Worldwide Headquarters. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is here tonight. Brad Huber, our normal producer, is back on his way home from Daytona. He'll be with us next week. We welcome Eddie Garrison in the studio running things tonight. We'll get to the scary issues from last night a little bit later on. Let's talk with some fun stuff because I think, you know, we've heard a lot today, and the most recent news was an hour and a half or so ago that Ryan Newman was awake and talking with his family, but that's all we have at this point, and we'll let the family release the information as they choose on their own schedule. Whether we want it quickly or not, it's their decision, and we hope to hear more good things as we move forward. So let's talk about, first, before we get to on-track action, let's kind of go in reverse order, and there's some new nuggets out there today, like Andretti Autosport announcing a 10:30 announcement tomorrow morning. We'll talk about what we think that is. Robin Miller has already reported that it's going to be I have to look at the verbiage that he used, that it's expected to be James Hinchcliffe's deal announced for the Indy 500. So we'll touch on that. But Friday, 100 days out, this past Friday from the Indianapolis 500, I'll let you kind of list some of the things, and then we'll both offer some reaction to what Roger Penske laid out for us. Nothing earth-shattering, but lots of info that I found significant. When you add it all up, I think this was a very big day.
I think it was a big day, too, and it honestly exceeded my expectations. I had an idea of some of the high points. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the bathrooms and the upgrade across, 125 plus facilities throughout Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But just a lot of nuggets in here. And as you said, as you start to put them together, you come up with a pretty good list. And I guess it started the headliner, although I'm not sure from a fan base standpoint it should be the headliner, but the headliner was that the purse, the overall payout to all the race teams that participate in the Indy 500, who make the Indy 500, and then usually the 34th qualifier gets money as well, is increased to a record $15 million, and that's up about $2 million from in the past. It has been as high as 14 and change, but to be $15 million, obviously a good number, a good start, I guess I would term it. I think, you know, in the long term, I think you'll see it go higher. But I think Roger acknowledges it's a good way to get started. And so I think that's the headliner, even if it's not the one that's most impactful to the ticket buyer.
Let's go through these point by point and kind of explain some things. Roger Penske mentioned that minimum $2 million for the winner. And this is how, in my mind, what he's talking about there. And then he said Simon Pagenaud earned somewhere around 2.5 or 2.6 last year. So the $2 million comes into play if a one-off wins the race. That's the scenario where it's less than $2 million. In all scenarios where a full-time driver wins the race, it's almost always going to be above $2 million. But what he's saying, and I don't know what the number would be, but it likely would be less than $2 million unless they won the pole and led every single lap if it's a situation like Dan Weldon in 2011. So that's where that comes in. As to the rest of the purse, this question was asked about minimums. I'm not sure that we're going to see it go up significantly for, say, the one-offs that finish 19th. You know, I don't know if it's still going to be $202,000 or not, but where it is going to go is, and I should have pulled up a prize list from last year, but I think if you were full-time, minimum was somewhere around $250,000 last year. I suspect that's where we're going to see it go up, the bottom for full-time entries, and this is a way of encouraging participation. And as Roger Penske mentioned, even if you are a one-off entry, in most cases, you are associated with a full-time team. A Dreyer and Reinbold is the one that stands out. That's one that's not a full-time team at the moment. But even if your one-off entry, say, an extra entry for Andretti Autosport, may not specifically cash that check, the entity itself will see extra revenue.
Because most of the extra entries for the Indianapolis 500, let's say we run the season with 26 full-time teams or 24, somewhere in that neighborhood, the last 10, if you will, to fill out the entry list come from the full-time teams anyway. There'll only be three or four, five cars that could come from non-regulars. And you're talking about Junkos, you're talking about Dreyer and Reinbold, you're talking about Dragon Speed. Mm-hmm. So the chances that an Andretti is going to add a car, that Foyt's going to add a car, that go on down the list, Coyne, you know, that's where those chances are really high. So those teams are you know, benefiting even if the minimum for a one-off is lower. The reason that Roger gave for increasing the purse, or I guess I should say one of the side benefits, is that he's heard, and this was an important topic over the years, but guaranteed starting spots he was very much in favor of for full-time participants. What he said the other day is, We can help our teams in other ways. We can increase the purse, for example, rather than giving them guaranteed starting spots. So that sounded like maybe not his concession, because I think he wanted to raise the purse anyway and saw the value in that, but almost a let's help the teams in another way.
And this is significant because this is coming from his company's bottom line at this point. Yes, I think and it was mentioned that there are some new partners and sponsors, but there's not a title sponsor. And this isn't anything that went directly paying for this. So this is an investment by Penske Entertainment. So that's a positive. And let's move next to the guaranteed spots, because I think the idea he's come up with serves as the best of both worlds. It's still the fastest 33 for all intents and purposes. And I do think last year a step was taken to help protect the James Hinchcliffes of the world from 2 years ago by adding the last row shootout, but it was still a one time. And the worst case scenario was, well, we're struggling, but we were 31st, and then we have a flat tire in this last row shootout, we're out. This takes care of that. If you don't make it,
could take care of it.
If you don't make it in a 75-minute session, which is what it would be, right? 75.
Yes.
And in the past, it was basically 45 minutes or whatever. It was one try. So you're going to get at least two, probably three tries at it in some circumstances, out of four, five, or six cars, probably six at the max. If you don't make it in that scenario, you really weren't good enough. But it's taking away most, not all, because you could crash.
There you go.
Yeah,
there
you could crash. But it's taking away most of the horrible luck situations, because it would take horrible luck happening multiple times. One, not qualifying in the top 30, and then two, something happening that was not recoverable in that 75 minutes.
Well, as you mentioned, you could be 31st and in past years be secured, and then, you know, you have a slip, you have a cut tire, and you crash, and you can't get to a backup car in that 75 minutes, and that could keep you out. But again, as you mentioned, you know, just it does give you multiple opportunities, and I think, you know, it does satisfy the best of both worlds. We all would like to see the fastest cars. Now, I know fastest 33, the shootout may be slower than you ran previously.
Yeah, that's why I say for all intents and purposes, because it's not a guarantee that it's the fastest 33. We know that, but most of us kind of still see it that way. You have to earn your way in.
That's a better way of saying it.
In similar circumstances.
That's a better way of putting it. Because even in the past, and we don't need to go through all the history of the Indianapolis 500 qualifying process, which always took me about an hour to explain to somebody in the first place, but it was still the fastest in your conditions, if you will, or on your particular day. And sometimes the slowest car...
Well, for the lineup, but the fastest 33 did make it.
Eventually, they all did make it. But the point, the problem was, you may have posted your time on the very first day of qualifying, and then it'd be, you know, slow later. But
yeah,
anyway,
you could be in a situation where you're either starting ninth or you're out.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a nice concession. And I think expanding the last row shootout is one of the positive things. For qualifying also, we're going to see faster speeds, or at least have a chance to, with more horsepower, 45 more horsepower. To me, in some ways, it just offsets the aero screen drag that we're going to see.
Yeah, there was some thought that speeds would go down. I've heard differing opinions on that, but it made sense that they were going to be down a little bit.
So I think we've got a chance for them to be higher, and at a minimum, we're going to see comparable speeds, even with the aero screen, which, by the way, for those not paying attention, this windscreen that's been added to the cars raises the center of gravity, or the distribution of weight is a little higher with this screen, and it also obviously is an object to break the wind, and therefore will slow the cars down just slightly.
And the cars are about 55 or 60 pounds heavier, something like that.
And they're a little bit heavier. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that happened in terms of qualifying weekend impacts you, means you're going to have to be a little busier, and that is that NBC, according to Roger Penske, will broadcast on Saturday and Sunday this year. There was a limited amount of NBC sports coverage on Saturday last year. Good coverage on Sunday, but details have not come out yet, but there will be more NBC coverage on the weekend as a whole.
So it won't impact how much we're broadcasting. We will just be broadcasting to more people. So
hey,
we did the whole thing
last year. I'm trying to make
NBC Gold, and I honestly haven't seen what the breakdown is, and I was standing with a coworker in the back, someone higher on the totem pole than I am, and this was news to both of us. So that's how Roger gets things done like that, and that's great. You know, I have no idea what the conflicts and the schedule is for NBC this year, but the more time on network, the better. This is significant time, and hopefully there's more time available on NBCSN when NBC isn't available. And, you know, the backup plan is, well, this gives you real value if you subscribe to NBC Gold, that you can see everything that's available. So that's a big positive.
One of the things you just mentioned is that the increased purse essentially came out of Roger Penske's pocket and, you know, wasn't really a cash in return type of investment for him. I think as you go down through this list, and we're going to go through some other things, I'm not sure there was anything that is revenue generating. There might be one thing on the whole list, but as we went through it, I kept thinking, well, that doesn't generate revenue for the company.
Well, he's mentioned that.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. I wanted you to point out. Yeah. I wanted to make sure we pointed out to the listeners that almost everything on this list is are things that are improvements or enhancements, depending on your perspective. That aren't revenue generating, and I think that's a tip of the cap to Roger. And again, I work for the company, but these are things that I've been going to races pretty close to 40 years now, and these are exciting things for me.
Well, and this is why we all were so encouraged when, you know, it's one thing for the Speedway to be sold, then the second is, okay, what are the new owners going to do? And most people, when they buy a property, they're looking at trying to make money as quickly as they can. Roger Penske is in this for the long haul. And this might also be why he's a good businessman, the theory that you have to spend money to make money. So before he even looks at ideas that are going to bring back revenue, it's let's invest, let's make it better, let's do what the fans have been asking us to do and what those invest in the sport have asked or suggested that we can do. And then if that goes well, eventually you can reap some rewards as far as revenue. But no, this is all spending right now, and he wouldn't commit. He was asked, you know, what are these investments like? And I think said, well, we're talking millions. So you're talking $2 million to begin with the purse, but all of the things that you'll list that are going on with the property, you know, we're talking well over $1 million, and we may be talking millions of dollars.
Yeah, I think
we're
talking about millions, and I'm looking on my phone.
It goes pretty quickly.
I meant to pull the transcript, and maybe I'll find it here before we exit this conversation, but Roger had one little soundbite in there. I was trying to find a transcript to get his verbiage accurate, and it was the question of, well, how does this different? I'm gonna present this a little differently than it was presented, but very much the point will be made. How is this different than 2016 when they had $100 million upgrade to the facility? And his point was, this checkbook isn't going to close after this Indianapolis 500.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, he's on the march to make this a world class, an even greater world class facility, regardless of what the dollar figure turns out to be.
I think he referenced there's no specific budgets.
That's the language.
We're going to spend what we think we need to spend.
I think that's a nice way of saying it, even if you've paraphrased. So let's go down through some other things in terms of the fan experience. A significant number of large screen video boards will be added, including 24 in the paddock seating section. These will be underneath the upper deck. So if you're sitting, and I've been in all the seats around the place, as many of the listeners know, there are places up underneath the grandstands where you can't see a big board because the overhang blocks your view. And there will be 24 large screen video boards as you go down the paddock from south to north. And those will be significant improvements for those Rays fans. And then there'll be 7 more big boards scattered across the infield, which will give you not just video, but running order. That's one of the things that, you know, the pylon offers. But if you can't see the pylon, you don't know if Scott Dixon's in fourth or 30th, unless you're able to count.
This was one of the things that I listed in my top 10 list of, and what I hear from other fans as well, throughout the month of May, and I think these are very significant. So the big TV monitors, if you will, underneath in the stands underneath the paddock, I would compare that to if you've been to Wrigley Field, baseball stadiums, where you're in the lower deck and the upper deck is above you. They put those TV monitors there, and when you get in one of those seats, you feel like, well, I'm in a mini suite here because I'm at the ballpark, but I've got replays.
Yes.
And that is going to, I think, make those very valuable seats. So that's cool. These are pretty good size. And then there's not, so I asked some follow-ups on this. There's not a lot of new video boards being placed. I think there are at least a couple, but what it is, they're being enhanced, and the ribbon board. So
yeah,
you'll get expanded coverage on the regular board and then the running order below that. And then explain what's going to be in the Pagoda Plaza.
So on the back side of the Pagoda, as you know, there's this plaza area lined with the extension of the yard of bricks and, you know, nice trees and so forth. And it's a good congregation place, a good place for people just to be with other race fans and have some access to some food trucks and so forth. And while there are two video boards on the backside of the Pagoda, they're relatively limited. I mean, they can show video, but that's the extent of it. What's the Pagoda, the backside of the Pagoda is about 100 feet wide, and you're going to have a full width video board, which will have all kinds of capabilities, not just video.
And I'm going to say these before were probably 15 or 20 feet wide.
Probably.
Because I looked when I left the other day, and I'm going to say the space in between them is about four times the size of the current video board.
Yep.
Does that sound about right?
Sure.
You know, so this is...
It's going to be 100 feet wide by 20 feet tall. So you're talking very horizontal video board, but certainly one that's... is going to be a showstopper, and I think also will be one that they can divide up into sections and present different types of information at the same time. You might show video. You might also be able to show lap times, timing and scoring, those kind of things. And you can do multiple, you know, electronic tricks, if you will, and present information to that big group of people. And I think what's going to happen is that Pagoda Plaza is going to become more of a festive area than it even is. I even suggested to Roger the other day that it really needs some seating. You know, I'm not saying grandstands, but to have, right now there's some, I would call them planters. They're kind of boxes around the trees that people sit on, but they're not really seats. Again, I don't know if you need bleachers, but I think as you start to build out what that plaza looks like, it could be more
picnic tables, more benches. The Daytona has a similar area for the Rolex 24. And when I would walk through that area at 10 p.m., 2 a.m. or whatever, it's packed with people just simply watching the race on the big screens, sitting about there close to concession areas, restrooms, things like that. You know, I could see having a gathering party to watch the Monaco Grand Prix the morning of the 500. Or maybe at some point in the summertime, you gather there and you watch another IndyCar race, and they have bands there and make some other destination type events. I think there are a lot of things that could be done with that. So that's cool. And that's where those two new ones, video boards, are coming from. The two that are up there now, those will be taken down and moved somewhere else on the property.
Yep. They're also adding the 5G Ultra Band. Verizon is heavy with that investment and that implementation. Obviously, Roger's got the phone numbers to the Verizon people all the way up at the top. By the way, the 20-foot by 100-foot wall is called the media wall. Wait a second. Is he calling it? I was a little confused about what he was calling that. I think he's calling at the media wall.
Yeah, I think so.
He's also doing some upgrading of the basically the elevator shaft of the media center. So I wasn't sure if that's what he was calling the media wall, but I think the video board is going to be the media wall.
Yeah, and some things that our listeners wouldn't care about. He said we are planning some enhancements and to make it easier for you. He was talking to the media to cover the event. He didn't really get into details there, but that's exciting.
Well, it's not a very soundproof room, for example.
Yeah.
And when we're trying to do a radio show and a reporter for print is trying to work, and you know how loud we can be.
Yes.
So just just dividing up that room a little bit is going to be, I think, in the long term. You want to get to some other things? Do we need to take a break?
Yeah, let's go ahead and step away, and then we'll pick up the pace a little bit because we have a lot of things we have to cover on track, but this is all good stuff, and there are a number of other really interesting nuggets that Roger unveiled on Friday, and we'll get to what we think is involved with Andretti Autosports announcement tomorrow and much more, all coming up. Your Twitter questions are welcome. I saw several come in this afternoon. Keep sending them at KevinLee23. We'll get to those very shortly here. Trackside, 93.5 107.5 The Fan.
I'm Tony Kanaan, and this is Trackside with Kurt Covington and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
The Twitter inbox is open. Some good questions already at KevinLee23. We'll get to those very shortly. Recapping some of the things we learned from Roger Penske, Mark Miles, Doug Bowles on Friday at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And in a moment, we'll get to on-track activity from last week. So we talked about purse. We've talked about qualifying. What else did we learn Friday, Kurt?
I think one of the big things is that Georgetown Road is going to be expanded, and it's going to be a two-lane. I mean, it just helps the ingress and egress of the front straightaway. Something like 75% of the people who come to the Indianapolis 500 come through Georgetown Road, one of those gates, because there's not much in terms of traffic coming in from the north, and there's some more coming out of the south end of the racetrack, but really Georgetown Road is your primary entrance. Mm-hmm. It was so crowded there on race morning and then after the race, and so having that expanded will be terrific. They're also going to have Victory Lane, which I think was the original intent when they built Victory Lane, that the car could be raised as well, and it'll be go up on the platform with the winning driver, and you'll see it better, and that's the whole point of having Victory Lane elevated more so than it is currently. And the thing that I pushed for since the moment the front gate one was installed and refurbished a few years ago is it'll be lit up. You cannot see that at night. It has dark
that
letters.
That was much discussed at the time. That's great, yeah.
So, you know, that was – I remember having that discussion with Doug Bowles literally the day it went up, and I said, you know, I left that evening and just couldn't see it. I mean, and so more so I don't expect it to be spotlights. I expect it to be proper backlit lighting. And gate two, which is off of 16th Street – that's going to be lit as well. Of course, you know, all the concession stands and bathrooms getting repainted, flags going up around the facility in a much grander way. Also, I thought this was interesting, subtle but interesting, that that the Speedway will assume responsibility for the beautification of Crawfordsville Road. So, you know, as you come off 465 on the west side of the facility, you come down and Sonax, and through Tony George's company, that's Sonax is Tony George's company, that there was some movement toward beautifying the median area. But I think what we'll see moving forward is that that'll be decorated much more festively, as we see at some other venues around the country. All this work that's being done, you know, more picnic tables and so forth will be open and ready to go once the track opens for business on the first week of May.
And we didn't list everything. It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
quote in the Star, I think from James Hinchcliffe, something along the lines of, oh, this is really cool, and this will be ready by 2021? No, we're talking in 2 months. Oh, wow. So this is a lot to get done, and like you said, I think we went into this. My thought going into this, when people asked me, what's this about? I said, well, I think we need to get a qualifying format or some understanding, because he has said we're not going to guarantee spots, but we would like to do something to help protect the full-timers and just beautification projects, you know, because we've heard a lot of talk about bathrooms and so forth. And obviously this all went well beyond that. A few other nuggets from Q&A in there that I found interesting. He was asked, I think Robin Miller asked this, would you think about a title sponsor as a way to even further increase the purse? He kind of deftly sidestepped that. He didn't really answer that question. So that's a deeper question, and that's a delicate area, because that's going to rub some people the wrong way. I think some people are going to say, no, you got to do what you need to do. And in reality, the common fan, no matter what the official name of the race is, it's going to be the Indy 500 or the Indianapolis 500. That is for the broadcasters, for the official print things that are distributed or so forth. So that may be something that's visited down the road. Robin asked about the apron as well, and Roger said, we don't have budget for that. And then I think also when he expounded on that, I think accurately said, we're not really worried about that right now. We've got a lot of other things to do, and as much as I'd be curious, especially what it would do for the Brickyard, I don't find anything really wrong with the racing, so I would put that down a little lower on my list of priorities and my wants right now. Can you talk about it? Yes, but...
Actually, Roger didn't want to talk about it. He said,
Well, he might talk about it down the road, but I've got a lot of things I want to get done in 2 months, and that's not high on my list of priorities.
Interestingly, he was asked about a third engine manufacturer.
That was
he
the
said,
next point ahead. Yeah.
My preference and my priority, and really the only thing I'm interested in at this point, is making sure that Honda and Chevy are with us long term. And those contracts are working to be extended, and that's his priority first. And then he'll turn to a third manufacturer. But he considers those foundations of the sport, as do most of us.
And the more you think about it, the more sense that makes, because you can go out and sign a third one, and that's great. But Honda's been with you for a long time. Chevrolet has been with you before and back with you again. And Roger's got pretty good links to Chevrolet as well. So, yeah, most important to keep those two. You got to have two. You don't have to have two. You've gone with one before, and it can be done. You'd like to have two. You'd prefer to go beyond that. So that makes a lot of sense. And that entire conversation is very challenging right now as to what the wants and needs are of the, as they say, OEMs, of the engine manufacturers, because is it a hybrid? Is it a combustion engine? Is it an electric engine? And you're trying to guess what they're going to want and focus on 3, 4, 5 years from now, where this seems to be moving. There's some people that think that we're going to move straight past the hybrid era and the next thing is going to be electrics. And we're seeing more of it, more of companies. I just read today, and I think this was announced a couple of days ago, that the iconic Australian brand Holden, which is a General Motors brand, GM is shuttering this car. And one of the reasons stated is we are investing, and I forget the billions of dollars. I think it was probably with a B. Maybe it was in the hundreds of millions, but it was a huge number in electric vehicles. So the game is changing, and need first to make sure the partners are with you, and then we can figure out what do you need, and we'll go from there.
Yep.
And try to find some others that can agree with that way of thinking. All right, let's get on track. Took us a little while to get it going. Lots of install laps and lots of chatter and commentary about install laps.
Well, because it was 40 degrees and raining.
Which, by the way, wasn't terrible. And I hope the audience, when you haven't seen IndyCars on track and really heard people talking over IndyCars, and especially when you've got Tony Kanaan and Paul Tracy sitting next to you, I found it, I'm biased because I was involved, but I found it very enjoyable and educational, even on the rain delay day on Tuesday. And then luckily we saw some action on Wednesday. So it was fun.
Well, I think the surprise of the weekend or the weekday was that Tony Kanaan was so good. I mean, he's good conversation, but I thought he was good with his intel, especially when you had an in-car camera and he was able to at least illustrate what different drivers were doing. And I think I wondered about some of the drivers allowing him to see more than maybe they would have liked. But interesting stuff. Of course, it wasn't a race, so maybe strategy and so forth on that dash wasn't helpful to him on a test. But just interesting commentary from TK. I know he has entertained the idea of being in television in the future. I think this went a long way to showing people that maybe better than you think. I mean, his language, his English isn't great. So it's when you're listening to him and you've listened to him enough, I think you can always follow him. Sometimes he's a little choppy, and I wonder sometimes how that would translate to television. But I thought he did pretty well.
I thought ahead of time he would be good at this. The only concern would be the language, and this is where I don't know, because I've known him for so long, I have zero difficulty understanding him.
Well, that's
because
we're around him.
But I don't know how someone who hasn't met him and hasn't listened to him, the casual fan that doesn't watch every broadcast, will feel about that. I think they'll figure him out pretty quickly because he knows what he's talking about. He's got a great personality. If he wants to do this, now, there's not necessarily room at the end, but luckily a lot of the analysts on television still do other things and are drivers, and you know, you just look for opportunities down the road. And Tony, by the way, Tony's not done driving yet. And that's one of the nuggets that we learned, that he's open to doing just these five oval races for another team this year. So that was something that we gleaned from this webcast over the week, that don't count me out yet. I'm not necessarily done after this year, and I might even expand on the schedule in 2020. But Tony's been a good friend for a long time, and I'm really glad that people received him very well in this
sometimes format. Sometimes athletes, especially when they're current or recently retired, they have trouble really sharing information because they're afraid they're going to tip their hand or burn bridges.
Yeah, they don't want to offend people.
And we weren't in a competitive environment last week at Austin, but I thought Tony overcame that potential hurdle pretty well.
He'll tell us what he thinks.
He just told us, and he told us a couple backstories on Ryan Hutter-Reay was a good one, that he had sacrificed some of his prize money to go to Ryan's foundation in 2009 or 10. I guess it would have been 10.
I think that would have been 10.
10 when he won Long Beach.
Yeah.
And then he said, and then Ryan took my job the next year. So I thought that was interesting backstory, one I had not heard. And there were other moments like that where as well as I know Tony, I learned some things.
So one of the stories, as I said in the top of the show, that we're already talking about 2021 silly season, and we'll get to what we saw at COTA in just a moment. And one of the reasons we're talking about 2021 silly season, and I've been saying this for the last month since we saw Scott McLaughlin announced for a test, everything's done with a purpose. Then when he was added to this preseason test, when he's announced replacing Elio, even though Elio was never fully confirmed for the road course test. And then I said, and if he ends up going to Texas, oh boy. Now, it doesn't mean I think he's going to run the Indy 500 this year, but there clearly is major consideration to Scott McLaughlin joining Team Penske moving forward. So whose spot does he take? Could they move to four? Yes, they could. But Tony kind of joined in the conversation, and his opinion was, I'm most worried if I'm Simon. I believe Simon's contract was a one-year extension, and he's up after this year. You know, it's kind of been back and forth. Is it Simon? Is it Will? Bottom line, the Penske drivers are going to be it's like Formula One. You just want to beat your teammates. You don't want to be the guy that's considered the least successful of the teammates, because if they do decide we're bringing him on and we're not adding cars, then you could be in trouble. And that's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Those guys are all really, really good.
They're all very good. I don't know who has the most appeal, if you were assuming that Joseph Newgarden was safe among the three. If Simon has more appeal to the rest of the paddock, or does Will? I guess I would lean towards Simon, but I mean, it's just a hunch.
I think so, in part because I believe he has an incredibly still strong relationship with Honda. And I think if he is available, Honda will do everything they can to help place him with a team. And then secondly, and there may become a bidding war for Simon Pagenaud, because he has a strong tie with Gilles DeFerrin.
That's right.
And that's not a Honda team anymore. So he's going to have a Chevy team. And I'm sure Chevy still loves him as well. But, you know, Honda has been the group that seemed to we never hear about, and maybe it's done and we just don't hear about it, but we hear about Honda helping to get the Alexander Rossi deal done with Andretti and the Colton Herta deal done. And, you know, for example, back Justin Wilson was driving for Andretti because Honda felt like they needed him in the fold. And I can list seven or eight other examples that have become semi-public where Honda helped finish a deal. I don't know. Either they've kept it secret or it doesn't happen on the Chevy side. And maybe in part because they have Team Penske, so they know they're always going to have at least three, if not four, strong cars. And now we're seeing why, even last fall and over the winter, people were still saying don't count out Simon Pagenaud from ending up at Arrow McLaren in 2021. And my thought would be, well, no, I can't count it out, but if he's got an option to stay at Penske, he's going to stay. And I still believe that to be the case, but somebody might offer him an awful lot of money, and if he's done another one-year contract, maybe he does decide, you know what, if someone gives me long-term stability in a situation I feel good about and can win, maybe he would think about that.
And I would be the top dog. You know, I would be the top dog on that team.
Yeah.
I would be the lead dog.
Do you think that matters where you're at Team Penske? I think that's the team where...
No, it doesn't, but that would be a nice side benefit to being at say, McLaren.
But you don't get in this situation where, if I'm not perceived to be the top dog, you know, because here's the next thing that's going to happen. It's always, and this may be a good thing. This may be motivation. This may be a reason why Team Penske is doing this, because they know we're all going to talk about Scott McLaughlin and where he's going to end up. They may have decided, you know what? Everybody needs a little motivation. That's good.
Sure.
And after, even if and when Scott McLaughlin comes in, you know what's going to be talked about next? When Alexander Rossi's contract is up. And is Alexander Rossi coming? And whose place is he going to take? So there's always going to be someone else out there that's good and available. And some teams and some people respond well to that pressure. And that might be part of it.
And we're about to find out which ones do.
All right. Okay, we'll start getting into some of your tweets. That'll answer some of the and address some of the other topics we need to address. And plenty more coming up. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
All right, let's get to some Twitter questions. That will cover some ground at Kevin Lee 23. Jeremy Davis, 1989, says, seen a report at Andretti Autosport. Making a partnership announcement at IMS at 10:30 tomorrow. Potential deal with providing parts crew for a Chevy team for Alonso? Question mark. Or is it a Hinch deal? So the verbiage made us all do a little bit of a pause, because it wasn't listed directly as driver announcement. It was something like partner announcement in there. But, you know, my thought was, well, I still think it's Hinchcliffe, because I've kind of detailed all that in the last couple of weeks, and that's where I believe he was going to end up once the Alonso thing fell through and everything was telling me that. And Robin Miller has now gone on record reporting that that's expected to happen tomorrow. But it's interesting he brings up the Alonso thing, you know, just thinking weird and wild and wacky and one of the stories that I talked about last week on the show, Kurt, while you were finishing up writing some things, was, and I forget how I phrased it because I think I talked for 15 hours or so last week, but I was hearing differing reports that either Andretti had signed Alonso expecting the Honda approval, or had given a verbal agreement, or Michael was still trying to help Alonso just in the name of, I feel bad because we went pretty far down the road before someone at Honda Japan decided I'm going to nix this. And that Michael has actually been trying to come up with ideas to place Fernando with a Chevy team. And then I wondered, you know, because this was coming about at one point last year or a couple of years ago about running an offbeat Chevy program. Could he supply crew to a Chevy team and call it something else and run Fernando Alonso? But Fernando could feel comfortable to know these are Andretti people and they are on or off the record getting information from the Andretti crew. Do I think that's going to happen? No, but it's just a thought. And I wonder if it's a thought that's crossed others' minds as well, because I still don't really see it. The only path I see for Alonso is with Arrow McLaren SP, if he feels like that's a good enough option.
I agree, and you know, we've played devil's advocate and tried to think of some other options. I too think tomorrow is about Hinchcliffe. My question would be, is it just Indianapolis, or as was bandied about last week? You saw more of that than I did, but does he do more than Indianapolis? Does he do, you know, a handful of races? Does he do more than one? So those are still to be determined things. Could it be some kind of association with Alonso, I suppose? But that doesn't really make sense.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't make sense at all. And TrackSideOnline.com, I think, was the first to put it out there in print that he's talking about multiple races, James Hinchcliffe is. And as I said a few weeks ago, when the Alonso thing fell through, that made it, if Hinch was still going back and forth between options, that made the Andretti even more of an easy call between the others, is that I think that was the team that had the possibility of doing more than just the month of May. I think it was going to be tough for Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan to find the crew. And what I don't know about their sports car program is, are those guys BMW employees, or are they Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan employees? Sometimes that can factor into things as well when you talk about extra crew. You know, I think it would be challenging for Dale Coyne Racing to do extra races outside of the month of May. So, and this goes along with the scuttlebutt that Alonso was thinking about doing more than the Indianapolis 500. So that means the team was already preparing to staff extra races. And because they have Indy Lights teams, they have at least three cars, if not four. They've got the personnel. Can they do it on an Indy Lights weekend? Maybe a little more difficult, but certainly weekends where there's no Indy Lights race becomes a lot easier for them to do. So my hope for Hinch would be that, and who knows if this is ready to be announced tomorrow, maybe it's just the 500 and we'll build from it. But from his standpoint, my hope would be that he can piece multiple races together in this relationship.
I think so. And I think that that could work for both parties. I really am going to be disappointed if Alonso doesn't have an option or doesn't choose to take, you know, the one best option we see out there. But here's the other thing. Does Arrow McLaren want him? You know, is he their best option? And I'm not sure that he is.
That could be debated. My guess is they would still okay that.
No, I probably would. I'm saying, but they've been exploring other people.
You could easily argue that Sebastian Bourdais or Oriol Servia would be a better option.
I would take Bourdais of the two and maybe of the three. I mean, obviously Fernando's, you know, important on a lot of fronts.
I think the team is going to like the flash and splash and attention that they get.
Yeah.
From Fernando Alonso. My guess is if Fernando is willing to do it, they will sign off on that and sign off on it very quickly. Okay.
Probably right.
I got behind there, so we will make up some time, and then we'll have plenty of time to chat right after the top of the hour. Stay with us. Another hour to go. Trackside 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Hour number two from the drivehubler.com studios. Thanks for joining us tonight. Eddie Garrison is our studio producer. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan on Monument Circle, Niemis Communications Worldwide Headquarters. Let's see. Before I forget, next week's show is Wednesday.
Oh.
Wednesday, 7 p.m. is what I have on the schedule, so we hope that's the case. Wednesday the 25th at 7 o'clock. Also, before I forget, we are hoping to, within the next few weeks, have an announcement on 2020 racing plans for a young driver I've been representing. I think he's got some talent and close ties to the family, so we're working. We still have room before we finalize the program for Jackson Lee and announce where and with who he will be driving this year. So if you would like to get on board as a partner, we could still probably find some space for you on the car for that. So that's coming in the next little while. We've got racing as far as testing. Did I see that Arrow McLaren was at Barber yesterday with their rookies?
Well, I can't confirm that only because I didn't look at the testing sheet.
Well, I saw Oliver Askew doing
a pit stop,
and it sure looked like Barber to me.
Me too. I was like, well, now could you see the backstretch? You know, in terms of where the fans sit back there by the trees. I was 95% sure that was Barber.
I listed this last week, and I don't have it in front of me, but I do remember seeing that there was going to be a test with Arrow McLaren SP this week at Barber Motorsports Park, so I take it was yesterday. Also still to come on March 2nd, AJ Foyt Racing, Andretti Autosport, Arrow McLaren SP, Chip Ganassi Racing, Dragon Speed, and Meyer Shank will be at Sebring, and then Team Penske will be there the following day. We also had four rookies, Oliver Askew, Rinus VK, Alex Pillow and Scott McLaughlin, along with veterans Ed Carpenter and Joseph Newgarden, testing at Texas Motor Speedway this past Friday.
We didn't really talk much about Coda on track, but I think it was a surprise of the weekend or weekday that Alex Pillow was in the top 10. Now, speeds don't necessarily mean everything at this particular test. They only got one day, and people were trying different things, and it was periods of wet and dry and so forth. But that's pretty impressive for first time out.
I think there were several things that really stood out. And just kind of looking at the speeds, Will Power at the top, and TracksideOnline.com had this note, too, that I wanted to share before we get back to that. If you're really into these kinds of things... what was it? Power's fastest lap was about 7/10 slower than his pole winning speed in 2019. Where did I put this? The last time that Power won, quote, won spring training was in 2014 at Barber, and that happens to be the year that he won the championship.
No, that's interesting.
So if you really wanted some sort of a nugget on that front, 27 drivers turned about 1,500 laps. Rinus VK was the busiest, completing 84 laps, 24 more than what the race distance will be. Considering the conditions, that the track never dried out. It was always damp. There were always little puddles that they were going through, even later in the day, to be within 7/10 of a second, which, by the way, was on option tires last year, which should be faster, which normally produces about 7/10 of a second, shows that they were on pace, if not faster than what we're going to see last year as well. And compared to the testing, they were only a tenth off of what Colton Herta did in the test in 2019. So Power was the quickest. Rossi was second quick. We're not surprised. Scott McLaughlin, third quick, second day in an Indy car.
Really? Yeah, really, first day against everybody else.
Yes, and hadn't done any Formula car driving in 10 years. And by the way, what he was driving 10 years ago is basically what I'm alluding to that my son is going to be driving. He was driving Formula Fords 10 years ago. Now, he's obviously been doing high-level driving in, you know, I had Kanaan explain this to me a little more. I'm not super familiar, but this was kind of what my interpretation has been too. VA supercars are essentially a hybrid between a GTD IMSA car and a stock car. So it's got some nimbleness, but it's got a lot of power. It doesn't brake nearly as well. And even before he got in the car, when I had the chance to meet Scott for the first time, he said, you know, I think I got a chance at this because it's always easier when you go to a car that adds downforce. He said, I think it's a harder transition, and Kanaan agreed with this too, to go from something that has a super high amount of downforce trying to transition immediately to a stock car. It takes a little while to do that. So it's just improving the performance of the car. Then the question is, how quickly can the driver find that limit, knowing what the limit is? And that's what's hugely impressive. It's one thing to say, okay, the car is just better, but to get out there and run similar times to the champions is remarkable.
Yeah, he had been at the track. This is one track he has raced on in the past, so he did know the track. But as you point out, I mean, there was periods of places on the racetrack were still damp, part were dry, part where you could see standing water a little bit, or maybe not standing, but, you know, you could see the water. So it was a very productive day for him and nervous time for the two drivers at Penske that could be on the bubble this year. So I think you'll see them perform well.
I still think there is a very good chance we see him in more than just the race.
I think so. He's scheduled for the GMR Grand Prix at Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the road course. I wouldn't be surprised if we do see him later in the season.
Some of it probably depends on how he does. That's a real good test of having a few practice sessions.
I think he'll qualify in the top 10. And he, you know, whether he's, quote, makes it through the race without issue, his doing or not, may impact how he finishes. But I think he'll qualify well.
And if you would have asked me a week and a half ago what's realistic for him in his first IndyCar weekend with, you know, I think maybe he's going to Sebring. Maybe he has one more day. I'm not sure about that, if he has another test day or not. But I would have said, you know, if he could qualify in the top 15, that'd be really good. top 10 is certainly a possibility, knowing that you're going to be in good equipment. Now you're starting to wonder, maybe he can flirt with being in the top 10 and racing up near the front. That's still an awfully tall ask, but it's fascinating stuff to watch this development.
I think he can qualify in the top. I think he can qualify in the top five or six. He wouldn't surprise me if he made the fast six. But racing in the fast six, given all the little nuances of the stops and
the car changing
as the fuel run continues.
And so, what I was saying on Wednesday is that if he ends up at that, because there was a TBD Penske driver, and I said if that ends up being Scott McLaughlin, whoa, watch out. Now I don't think he's going to be added. I believe Team Penske when they say this is our lineup; it's set. Four cars for the GP, four for the 500, including Elio. I don't think they're going to change that. They're not going to add one. They're not going to replace someone.
I agree with that.
Somewhere I've seen, with the conflicts, you can kind of break it down to what his options are. And there aren't a lot of options, but I think, one, you could see him later on in the year at an oval. But I also think this could be done with multiple things in mind, looking ahead to 2021. Let's get him. We're planning on at least exploring the possibility of him being full-time in 2021. So here is an open test day. He is a rookie with less limitation. Let's put him on this. Give him as many days before he gets to being a full-time driver as we can. And B, an extra car where maybe we learn something.
Yeah.
Maybe we learn something. Tough ask for a rookie to give you something useful, but I think there's probably something that could be learned on that front.
Well, there's data coming off the car, so you can gather that as well.
On down the rest of the line, Newgarden 4th, Herta 5th, Pagano 6th. No surprises in any of those fronts. Oliver Askew 7th, Pato Award 10th. I think that's very solid, not only for relatively new drivers. Now, Pato did race and raced well there last year, so not new for him, but new team, new environment. That's a good start for Arrow McLaren SP.
I think Askew is going to be a surprise of the season. And we aren't going to be surprised, but given his step up in competition, it'll be, and the team's level, honestly, I think that'll be a big surprise if he performs well.
Here's another one that just kind of a side plot for this year, going back to what we talked about last hour and what's been mentioned for a few months. Some think that Simon Pagano could eventually end up at Arrow McLaren SP. It's possible that these two young drivers are fighting for one seat
in
2021. Now, I think it's more likely, assuming that both of them have decent years, that they expand to three cars.
I think that's a more likely option.
And bring on a veteran like a Pagano or someone else. And then, oh, by the way, a lot of people think Jimmy Johnson is going to be in a car for a few races with that team. That's the team he was hanging out with. So that's where that conversation is going to start. Does it mean he's locked in with them? No, it doesn't. But that's a Chevy team. And he has a relationship with Zach Brown. So you kind of start there. Could they run a fourth car? I think they really want to run Jimmy Johnson in some races. If they brought in a veteran in a third car, could they do a fourth? Yeah, they probably could. But that's just another dynamic moving forward. Scott Dixon, 8th. This is the category where we say you can't always read a whole lot into the speeds. And with a veteran driver like Scott Dixon and a team like Dixon and Rosenquist, who knows what everybody's working on?
That's right.
So you just don't know. Are Penske and Ganassi ahead of them at that track right now? They might be. Or they might have taken a more of a big picture type of focus to do some things that didn't really, and sometimes it depends on, did you do your new tire run and get clean laps right out of that? If you didn't, then you're not going to have the best times on the charts.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I've never thought practice sessions or test sessions were a true reflection, given how competitive this series is. I mean, you could just be a tick off and didn't get the tires or didn't get the track spacing that you needed, and you could be 8th when probably you're 3rd. So
now we get to the young man that you mentioned, Alex Palou, and I think he did impress a lot of people. And I had a chance to visit with a few different people who already had heard good things about him coming in and then became more impressed, because I think at times he flirted with the top 5 to end up 9th overall. Uh, he, he he looks like he's the real deal. And this is significant because that was one of the big questions coming in for Dale Coyne Racing. You know, they've moved on from without Sebastian Bourdais, maybe in part because of reasons out of their control being financial. They've lost their top two engineers. What is this team going to be? Are they going to take a step back? It looks like maybe they won't have to.
Too early to tell. And I knew that. I know that's obvious as I say it, but, you know, taking a step back, you know, Ferrucci's deal, he completed virtually every lap last season, and he had the third best effort on the ovals last year. I mean, only Newgarden and Pagano were better from a results standpoint. So, you know, Ferrucci may not complete all those laps this year, may not run as well in the ovals, and, you know, still could be higher in the finishing order. So it's really difficult to say. The problem, again, for these teams and trying to judge where they're at is just how deep they are. And the big teams, if you will, Ganassi and Andretti, have expanded. So they add two more cars to, if you're looking at a top 10 and you're looking at an Askew or an Award or Ferrucci challenging for the top 10, well, now all of a sudden you've got, you know, another Ganassi car and a true Andretti car in that top 10. So just kind of adds to the competition.
I liked Alex Palou. I think he's going to be fun. He has a lot of confidence. He's got some experience before, you know, from talking to some people explaining to me a little bit about the Japanese Super Formula Series. There are a lot of drivers that becomes a destination. So to come in as a rookie and win a race, I'm told that was significant, that this is not just someone with a line on budget. Yes, that's part of the deal, and he does have some backers that are helping him get here, but that's the realities of motorsports. But he is someone with credentials as well, and don't be surprised if he's someone that can play a part this year. And he said, you know, I've actually been driving a car that's less weight, similar power, faster in some ways, but the feeling here is the driver makes more of a difference in IndyCar, and he was kind of excited about that. So it was fun to that's what I enjoyed most about this, just meeting the new people and hearing the story from him and Sergio, Sete, Camara. And even though I've been covering IMSA for the last year plus, I had never dealt with Felipe Nasr. You know, we break it down into sections, and the Action Express team has just never been in my section, and I think I had met him once. So I chatted with him for a little while. He's very open to doing whatever is asked of him and said, I'm open to doing ovals. He's got the one specific conflict this year. That's still one of the remaining questions, is who's going to be in the second Carlin car between him and Sergio Sete Camara. I would say I spent more time with him and found him to be very fascinating. He's an F2 driver, Camara.
Camara, the younger one.
From Brazil. So I shared some of this on the webcast, but I don't expect everyone heard all 14 hours over the 2 days. But he's from the same town in Brazil as Vitor Mira, Rafa Matos, Bruno Junqueira, and Cristiano Di Matta. He grew up like many drivers outside of America, you know, focusing on the Formula One drivers, and soon figured out, hey, there's another path here that has become available. And he's been an Indy 500 fan for a long time, but had only met Kanaan one time. He's met Castroneves once, vaguely has met Rubens Barrichello over the years, but he's really excited about the prospects. You know, couldn't commit to anything. It all just depends on what kind of deals can be made. And I think there's probably some jockeying for position for that car, but he said, I've got no problem with the ovals. I'm fascinated by that. I want to try them.
Well, keep in mind, somebody's going to have to run the other side of Chilton's.
And one of those guys could slide over there. You know, the hot rumor while we were there, and I think David Malsher was the first to write it, is that Connor Daly could be a possibility sliding over. I asked Connor about that, and he said, well, I don't know where that's coming from. Then eventually it was, well, yeah, I think that's been broached at some point. And I did not see Ed to ask him on that, but I think it's possible. And that's the best. Some would say, well, why would a team owner allow another driver to drive for another team when he's under your employ and this was the deal? Well, here's the advantage. Ed's a driver too, and he understands that everybody wants to do as many races as they can. And maybe it helps that this team is not Penske. It's not gonna, you know, it's not a team that you're fighting for in the championship. Now, maybe you are fighting for them in wins if someone that's accomplished like Connor, who did a nice job with them on the ovals last year, continues to up their program. But I think Ed's the one of the owners, and I think there are others that would be in this boat that at least would give this strong consideration. So I think that's a possibility of that happening.
Now, the only thing, and I didn't record all the editorial gatherings that we had on Monday at COTA on content day, but either Connor or Ed made a statement that was pretty definitive that Connor was going to stick with them. Now, again, I don't have the recording to go back and I have Ed's. I'll go back and listen to it closely.
Well, if one of them said it was probably Ed. I don't think Connor would say that.
So I'll listen to Ed, try to report back for next week's show. But it's interesting that one of them was pretty definitive, unless they phrased it in just such a way that gave them an out. But one of them was pretty convincing. And I remember, and I was moderating, so I wasn't really taking notes. I was listening. But it was...
Well, if that's true, that's within his right, because this was the deal.
I think it was Ed.
We agreed to it, but sometimes things change.
Yeah, I know things change. I'm just saying they also could have crafted their answer to fit their needs, which people are really good at.
Yeah.
But especially when they know they're going to get the question.
You know, I think there are other options still for that car. I would think, I think a Spencer Pigot could be an option.
Yep.
I think Gabby Chavez... for the 31, I wouldn't think R.C. Enerson would be an option right now for the ovals because he's not done that before. And if budget was required, if I'm R.C. Enerson, I'm spending that budget on road courses somewhere where I could really show what I can do right off the bat. But, you know, remember he tested for that team last year at Circuit of the Americas. That's why, conversely, we don't necessarily read into it that these two guys that were in the car were going to be definitely in the car when they get to St. Petersburg. There are going to be other factors involved in that. So that's still a very big TBD moving forward there. And you know, if you look at the speed charts, you see Nasser, if you weren't following along with the test, is down there in 26th, second slowest of the weekend, of the week, which turned out to be one day. Well, that's not apples to apples. Felipe Nasser was in the car first. So the original plan was Nasser was going to do Tuesday, just like Sebastian Bourdais was going to do Tuesday in the 14 car, and then the second driver, Dalton Kellett in the 14, and Sete Kamara in the 31, would have the second day. Well, it became a one-day test, so Nasser started the day, and he got it while it was wet. And it was still pretty wet when he got out of the car, but when he got out, he was in the top 10. So he put up representative times, and Sete Kamara went faster, but I would say they were relatively in the same ballpark. It could maybe even be argued that Nasser was quicker in that circumstance. That's why I just wanted to point that out. You can't really read into the times as far as that was concerned, as is the case for Sebastian Bourdais, 24th. But he was third pretty late in the going in his time. And I'm starting to wonder, and again, it's test day, but I'm starting to wonder if this investment, because that's what it is, Bourdais is not bringing any money to the A.J. Foyt Racing Program, and they need partners and they need speed, money by speed, but maybe he's going to provide some real dividends for them.
Yeah, I think he will. I have such high regard for Sebastian, and I think he continues to show over and over again just how multifaceted and diverse his skill set is, from the ovals. Like, in my mind, he's to be the best choice for Arrow McLaren in their third car at Indy. And I think he will help Foyt.
And finally, Dalton Kellett. Also, time not represented because he got in late in the day. He did 17 laps, which is about 30 less than anyone else. And, you know, there was chatter if you go to Twitter and message boards about Dalton, because he's not won in Indy Lights before. He didn't run particularly up front. But every car and every experience is different. Some drivers adapt better to one type of car than they do the other. So let's give him a chance and see what he does. And frankly, considering that he had just a couple of days, and it's been a while since he had been in an Indy car, and coming in halfway through that last day, I think his time is closer than what a lot of people would have expected. 150.9, which was only 0.2 off Nasser, who, as noted, ran when it was more wet, but it still wasn't fully dry. So he was within 1.9 seconds of what Connor Daly was able to do for the entire day.
Yeah, he got in late.
Time. I think Dalton Kellett did fine in this circumstance, and I think he showed people what he needed to show them in that test session.
Yep, I agree.
So that's what we have from on-track activity. We'll get back to your Twitter questions, see what you have in a moment. And comments are also welcome at KevinLee23. And I know there are some nuggets on my list of things to bring up that I want to do in just a second. What's that?
I was just going to say on the Nugget board.
On the Nugget, the Nugget board has more topics du jour. We'll get to next, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
I'm Ryan Hunter-Reay, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Twitter questions at KevinLee23. Kurt Cavan is here. Thanks for joining us. We've got other things we want to get to, and maybe back to some of the things we learned at Circuit of the Americas as well. I'll go in reverse order now. Lee 50S, will the drivers get the 45 extra horsepower on Fast Friday, or will it start on the first day of qualification? We haven't seen specific announcements about all of that, but it's always been if there's extra horsepower for qualifying,
yep,
it would also be available on Fast Friday, too. At Chris Roberts, at E. Chris Roberts says, will Alonso be in Indy in May? So we've addressed that a bit since he sent that in a little over an hour ago.
I think it's looking less and less likely.
You know, I saw, and I took a screen grab of it today. Someone retweeted something. Indy 500 blog tweeted a screen grab that was maybe in Spanish and translated saying, Alonso confirms he will be at this year's Indy 500 but doesn't want to reveal the team. Now, that was early this afternoon, and I thought, well, if there's something to this, it will get picked up by Chris Medlin at Racer. You know, he'll dig into it if there's anything to that. So I don't know if this is just something in a foreign language on a message board or if there's anything to that involved, because I'm still not seeing a real good path for him.
We're both doing the math, and we're running out of cars.
It just depends on, does he, as we've said, Arrow McLaren SP, if he feels like that's good enough, he's confident. You know, it's Craig Hampson engineering that car.
Yep.
Two rookie drivers at Indianapolis. So where does that all lie? My thought is that he cannot take a chance because he, in my mind, and I know this is unfair, but this is what we do as talking heads. We try to guess what people think. And I think perception and reputation matters to, well, it matters to all of us. And it matters to someone like Fernando Alonso. And
it matters to two-time world champions.
Yeah. And I still think that one of the ideas that could be on his mind is I want to use a successful run in the Indianapolis 500 to help generate interest for me to come back to Formula One full time, because I think he is hoping there is a good ride available. If a good seat is available, he will jump at it to return to Formula One in 2021. I don't know that one's going to be available, but I think he's made that very clear that in the right circumstance, which is what? Three teams? You know, it's Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull. Doesn't Red Bull run a Honda? That's not going to happen then. So cross them off. And I think that the options are dwindling at the other two places. So I don't, you know, maybe someone else takes another step up. Maybe he rekindles a relationship with McLaren. They move another step forward and he goes back there. But they've got young drivers. I don't know where he finds a seat in Formula One. But I think in his mind, that's still an option for him.
I believe it is, too. I just don't know that I believe that he thinks an Indy 500...
Maybe not. That may be stretching it too far.
Yeah. One leads to two.
I think if you...
If he wins it, that may be different.
If you almost win or win the Indy 500, I think that matters a little bit from some of the other people that get involved in deciding who our driver is going to be, you know, partners and things like that. I think there's maybe winning it is the only thing that would matter. Maybe that's it. Because he's already run up front.
I think he's looking at this like, I'm not going through what I went through last year. That was embarrassing. I'm a two-time world champion.
Yeah.
How do you miss? It's not like there was 100 cars. What were there, 36, 35?
There were 35.
I mean, come on. I mean, I'm 34th out of 35. That's what he's thinking in my mind.
So is he willing to make that leap? In my mind, I think that's what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Like the Peter King column, things I think I thought I thunk or something.
Yes.
Paul Ingram at Paul J. Ingram 56. The knock against WeatherTech Raceway test was February conditions don't translate to September. How was COTA better? Why would IndyCar not want to be in Monterey the week after Pebble Beach Pro-Am? You saw the weather. So I don't know that it was ever said that IndyCar is not testing at WeatherTech Raceway because of the weather. Now, maybe Paul is remembering things that I said or you said as we conjectured about where testing would be a year and a half ago. And I would say, well, my opinion would have been based coming from someone that had never, ever been to the region. So it was a very uneducated opinion. I don't know that I – maybe that was a real concern for IndyCar officials. But I think more so it would be the reason for last year's spring training be there is that this is a new race. It is a new market. We would like, as was somewhat WeatherTech Raceway, but we want to use this as an opportunity to try to gain a foothold in Austin. They also, and you can speak to this, I think this is where Austin probably works better in that regard. So the official open test is more than just finding a track and finding weather. You need the facilities to do all of the other things that go along with content day, media day. You need buildings. You need structure.
Well, it's helpful. Certainly helpful.
Yeah.
You could do all those things in Indianapolis. It does change the dynamics. But, you know, it is helpful when you have, you know, the proximity to the facilities that Circuit of the Americas provides. I don't know why the decision was made. One spring training site over another. That's a little higher than my pay grade, but certainly COTA works. And, you know, the weather was an aberration this particular year. Normally, you know, we looked at what it was a few days after we left, and it was 68, 70 degrees and, you know, sunshine.
And it was warm before we got there.
And it was warm before we got there. So you could hit wrong on a lot of locations, you know, this time of the year.
I like the idea of that moving around to different venues.
But there's a limited number of places you can do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's two or three or four, but
I'm not sure there's four, but
well, maybe that are currently on the schedule. You may be right. You know, Barber has worked there before. Barber's a little iffy.
Barber's iffy.
And I suppose, although I think, and again, this is, there's a lack of knowledge here, but I think the Monterey area is probably pretty consistent, you know, in the 60-ish range. So you're not going to see that chance of 79 that you might see in Austin or you might see in Birmingham at that time. But it's probably pretty consistent. But I think there are always other factors that are going to be involved. And by the way, I don't know what the track rentals are.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, I think WeatherTech Raceway has restrictions on the number of days that it can be loud in the area. So maybe that plays into things.
By the way, I've got the highs for San Francisco, which is not Monterey, but it is in the ballpark. The highest all week shows 64, and the lows are in the low 40s.
Ultimately, I am in favor of as many trips to Laguna Seca and Monterey as we can accommodate.
I understand that.
So count me in for that, but I also like Austin, and normally it's going to be a little better than it was in this particular circumstance. From Don Davis at Big D Carts, why was the spring training live stream unlisted on YouTube instead of being available on all of IndyCar's social media platforms? So Kurt may actually know the answer to this, but he would be my guess. I believe what we did last week you can now find on YouTube. Whether that's on the IndyCar page or just doing a search, I do not know. No, it's on the IndyCar page.
It's on the IndyCar page.
I looked for it today because I was looking for some audio to use for our open, and that was one of the options that I saw before I settled on the Roger Penske presser from Friday. Here would be my thought. So there's an app. There's an IndyCar app that NTT helps IndyCar provide, and NTT has paid IndyCar a pretty significant amount of money to become a partner. So my idea would be you are looking to return some value to your title sponsor, and we want to get people to run through the NTT IndyCar app. And while it may not be the most convenient to not have YouTube, because we're more used to going to YouTube, and you probably did cost yourself some viewers through the algorithms finding it, this is a way to give something back to your partner.
Absolutely. You've hit it on the head. You're trying to drive people to the app and to the website.
Okay. And to the website as well, which is important. And it is now available on the YouTube page, so that's good on that front. All right, some other tweets we'll get to in just a moment, and then I'll see what we've missed as well here. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Elio Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kirk Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
All right, a few more tweets before we go at Kevin Lee 23. This is from Ryan Potempa. I love seeing Newgarden's Twitter commentary during the 500 delay on Sunday. With Roger doing such a great job of being focused on fan experiences, is there any talk of what IMS Productions is planning for fan engagement via social media? I'm thinking Penske Games vibe here. I did see an announcement today that this is the final year of the Penske Games.
Seems like it was going for a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe a couple of years. I think good on them. Get out while you're ahead. Get out while people are still enjoying it. You've kind of covered all of the unique content that you can there.
Yeah. It's IMS Productions. I mean, they have a heavy workload. They do professional bull riding. They do all the IndyCar races. So, you know, they've got a pretty full calendar, but we'll get them involved.
I would say for fan engagement type things and things like this, you don't even necessarily need IMS Productions.
That's
IMS
right.
Productions is a
production company.
It's a full, big time television production company, and the people that are younger than us that know how to work their phone and their equipment that you can buy for $1,000 or whatever can put together very professional looking presentations for things such as this. And IndyCar has used people like that aren't necessarily IMS Productions type people. So your point is well made that those types of things can be addressed. And there are some people that can do that moving forward from that front. In a lot of ways, though, that's good for the teams to kind of do that, to everybody kind of be unique, and it's just kind of a little battle from within, and it's all promoting the sport.
Yeah.
But let's see who can be the most creative, and they all do different. You know, I think Arrow McLaren has been great with some of the social media things that they've brought out. Andretti Autosport has our friend Mike Kitchell's group that does a lot of their social media. Anders Krohn's group does Arrow McLaren's social media posts. And I know I'm leaving some teams out there, but just about everybody does.
Obviously, Penske's good.
Does a good job of creating content that, yes, promotes them and their partners, but promotes the sport as well.
You look at how all the teams took kind of a different approach to unveiling their liveries.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, you know, we had talked about some ways to do it as a group unveil of the liveries. But teams really did a nice job of taking it upon themselves. Some did it with social media. Some did it with an event like Arrow McLaren SP, and some did it with still photos. Some did it with kind of animation, if you will. So there are a lot of different ways to skin that cat.
We'll finish with a serious tweet. John Day, 81 Indy, says, I blame Ryan Newman's accident on two things. One, blocking, weaving back and forth leads to just that sort of accident. Two, overtime. If they had stopped at 500 miles, this never would have happened. If the race ends under yellow, so what? To point two, okay, yes, technically it did run extra. And if they had thrown the first caution when they crashed, yes, it wouldn't have happened. But, you know, I don't know. A crash can happen anytime. But your first point, I think, is spot on. And it's something that NASCAR has to think about and to deal with, that the only way to win that race is you have to block, and you are hoping the guy behind you decides he's going to lift. And if he doesn't want to, you're going to crash. And he can't win if he lifts. It's
I think there's going to be a time and a place to talk about how you, what you could have done differently. Right now, I think the focus is on Ryan, and you know, we all can't think and pull and pray hard enough for him. So
I just saw Jimmy Johnson tweet something like, "So glad to hear he's okay, and I hope Jimmy Johnson has more information on that front, because we've got you fear the worst when you don't get any information and you see the way that Mike Joy took the broadcast off the air. You're fearing, uh-oh, they know something that we don't know." And then the NASCAR media did a fantastic job of not speculating, of just waiting until we got the proper channels and Steve O'Donnell, the NASCAR executive, making that statement that he has survived, but he is in serious condition. And then a couple of more statements today moving forward, and the latest being, I think, a little before 6 o'clock or so today, maybe before 5 o'clock Eastern time, that he is awake and talking with his family. So,
but we don't know what that means.
We don't know what that means, but we also respect their right to control this information and disclose whatever is involved, and hopefully it's all bumps and bruises and minor as we move forward. But that's something that will be learned in the coming days, coming weeks, coming months, whatever the case may be. But we'll hope and pray for the best for Ryan Newman at this stage.
Good for, you know. Yeah, can't think on his behalf more.
So, and more, anytime something bad happens, that, like you said, they're going to look at the side door and the roof. And is there anything that we can do to protect the driver more? Something came from... Every time something bad happens, usually something good can come from it. So we'll see as we move forward on this. Thanks to for your tweets for the program tonight. We'll try again next week, Wednesday, I believe. 7 o'clock is our time. Eddie, good job tonight. Thank you. Good luck on getting the podcast posted in a little while. I'll give you Eddie's home phone number if that doesn't get posted, and you can call him directly on that front. That's available at 107.5thefan.com and the usual outlets on iTunes, and I have no idea if we're on Spotify and the other things. We are? Okay, so I'm a little behind the loop on that, but I know how to work my iTunes account. Thanks to Kurt. I'm Kevin. We'll talk to you next Wednesday night at 7 here on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.